Hello, hello, hello. This is Conrad Werner once again. Just to tell you that this is not a new episode. This is another summer repeat, the second in our series of summer repeats, because me and Megan are on a holiday for ages. This episode is from November last year, 2022. And we had a very special guest, which was Wael Askander, an Egyptian journalist who had a rather interesting encounter with the Berlin police. It's a very eye-opening interview, I think. I think it's one of our best episodes, and very interested to hear what you make of it. Thanks very much. Bye.
This week, German police chat as journalist Wael Askander joins the Mega Canners to talk about the time the cops refused people's second scoops on Hermannplatz. Meanwhile, Veronica Nadd is on board to talk about the new Hanau exhibition at the HKW in Berlin. Jack Daniels all round? Don't mind if I do.
It's time for another episode of Megan's MegaCan. I'm Megan. I'm here in Berlin with Ex-Berliner Magazine and Conrad Werner.
Hello.
Hello. And yeah, sharing a microphone means we have guests. We're very excited. We have the lovely Wael Askander. Hello. I'm going to wait for you. Sorry. Everyone is sharing a microphone today.
Hello. Hi. Yeah, I got it. Hi.
Wael is an Egyptian journalist who's here to talk to us today. And we have friend of the podcast, Veronica Nadd. Hi, Veronica.
Hello.
Who's an activist and is also working with, and I was hoping when I got to the end of the sentence, I would remember the organization you work for, Forensic Architecture?
Well, technically forensics, but yes, Forensic Architecture.
Oh, like, so
close. Sister of Forensic Architecture.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much for being here. Before we begin, shall we have some booze?
Yes.
Yay, okay.
Great idea. What have you got for us this week, Megan?
I have been teaching The Road by Cormac McCarthy. I don't know if anyone else knows that book. And we were talking today about the symbolism of a can of Coke that they find and the boy drinks in this like dystopian world where everything is over, but this Coke can has survived the drink of Coke. And ever since then, all I've wanted is cola. So... listen up, because you have to make a choice. Jack Daniels and cola. Gentleman Jack and cola. I don't know what the difference between Jack Daniels and Gentleman Jack is. Who knows? Jim Beam and cola.
Gentleman Jack is more alcohol, I think.
Really? Well, I think these are all mega cans, so they'll all be 10%. If they start pushing megas over 10%, I'm done. And a rum and coke, Havana Club. YL, what would you like? That's your first one.
I think I'll take a classic Jack Daniels and cola.
The classic mega. Yes. I think that's a good choice. Are you an aficionado of mega cans?
No, I mean, that happened... I don't know if they were around when there was Smirnoff Ice. Is that a mega can?
Oh, I love a Smirnoff Ice fan. Unless you're about to say that you don't like it, in which case...
No, I love it. But
good
that was
choice.
Ages back.
It kind of is in that it's an alcopop, but what makes a mega can is the fact that it's 10%. So Smirnoff Ice comes in at, I think, around 5. So this is the only part of the show I get to sound knowledgeable. So I'm going to totally milk it. I've talked about literature and megas. But Smirnoff Ice is absolutely delicious. But there is a mega can that tastes like Smirnoff Ice. But I can tell you about that later. Veronica, what would you like to drink?
The rum one, please. Oh, thank you.
A Conrad?
Oh, I'll have the Gentleman Jack.
You are very gentlemanly. And I will have Jim Beam. I like a Jim Beam. All right.
I like mine because mine's got a sort of a matte finish.
It does have a matte finish.
All Cheers.
Right. Cheers.
So good. Cola is delicious. I'm sorry. I know it's bad.
So, well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be on.
Now, the reason why we ask you to come on the show is because you've got a very interesting story about an encounter with the German police at Hermannplatz, and it involved eating ice cream. You don't have to tell the whole story, but the best bit of the story, I think, is when you asked the police officer whether you could have ice cream, and they said yes.
And then you asked if you could have two scoops, and they said no. But maybe you want to tell the story from the beginning.
I think this is the story. You kind of like that was the climax of the story of what happened with the police. I think that's the most interesting part as well. I mean, the story's actually very mild. I was with one of my friends, and we were walking through Hermannplatz. I live close to there, and we're heading towards Hasenheide. And along the road, we just stopped in the island in between, and there was a lot of police. Happens to be the site of a protest that was banned by Berlin. So we saw some of our friends, and before we could even move across, we were surrounded by the police, and they were like, what are you doing here? And like, yeah, we're just going through here. And they wouldn't let us leave, and we were just surrounded, you know, kind of detained for an hour. They promised not to press charges, but eventually they did. But the most interesting part is that when we were in the middle of this whole situation, am I being arrested? They're like, no. Am I free to go? They were like, no, we're just going to collect your information. So I was like, I didn't understand what was happening. They were not very clear. So at that point, I thought, okay, well, there were other people sitting around. If I'm that free, so why don't I get an ice cream? And I said, hey, can I get an ice cream? And they said, yeah, sure, we're not detaining you, but you cannot leave. So I went and had an ice cream. And my friend was like in the middle of it. I'm kind of used to the police because I'm Egyptian, and I've had a lot of encounters with what they're like in 2011 and, you know, continuing to this day. So I was kind of calm, but my friend was like really angry, and then she's a German citizen, and she's like, how could I be racially profiled? We look Arab, like she's she's of Egyptian descent. Then I said, hey, like, take it easy, we're not gonna, you know, they're gonna do whatever they want, let's just have an ice cream. It was actually she that wanted two scoops, and she, because she had problems with the other officers and she wasn't, you know, she was really angry, they denied her the second scoop. And I found that was really weird. You're free to do what you want, but not really. And that's kind of my encounter there.
I'm sorry. I assumed when I got to that part of your very, very interesting article that was like a metaphorical flourish. They really said no to the second scoop.
Yeah, they said no to the second scoop. I mean, the whole...
What petty fucking shitty God...
It's just incredible. I mean, that's why I wrote the whole piece, because it was so farcical because of that, you know, second scoop. I mean, just also
that. Also really, really good line, which is when the ice cream man seller tells you that he's out of tiramisu. You're like, to this point, that was the most disappointing turn of events.
Oh my God. Well, yeah. I didn't even get the ice cream that I wanted.
Before we talk, because we're going to mainly talk about the police here in Berlin and Germany, but you say you have a lot of experience with police in Egypt. You want to tell us just a bit about that?
Yeah. Also a story that goes into a decade, but the short version of it is police in Egypt is very brutal, acts with impunity. In 2010, they killed someone in plain view in Alexandria. And everyone got really, really angry and went to protest. And then in order not to hold the police accountable, they suppressed everyone else. And that was, you know, maybe in short, the eruption, part of the reason of an eruption of a revolution in 2011, where a lot of people were killed and the police, you know, was the primary target of the anger of young people there. So the revolution, people think it's 18 days, but it's actually several years of events that I was a journalist at the time. But the more and more, you know, things became clear, I got into confrontations with it, the more on the ground I was in wearing various hats.
You said in the article, you mentioned that this encounter with the German police reminded you of, how is the German police different from the Egyptian police?
Yeah, I wasn't physically harmed. I wasn't imprisoned for no reason. That's the main difference. I think they're similar and different. I think that in the end, the sheer volume of violence is less just by virtue of they not needing to have that kind of violence in order to keep order. but the same impunity, and if they decide to do whatever they want, they will not be held accountable, and that is similar. So I had really nice conversations with individuals, and people think that every policeman is racist, and it's not true. It's the institution that's racist. And so we had really nice conversations that I would never have been able to have with Egyptian police, especially after 2011, and they got really angry that people protested against them.
Yeah, I think that's like an interesting way of looking at it, because certainly when things come out, like if we think about the German coverage of when the summer of 2020 after the murder of George Floyd, and it was all this kind of like endless panel discussions about how like our police aren't like that and da-da-da. But like you say, it seems it's easier. These protests are that they're dealing with in Germany are mainly peaceful. There's not, you know, and we don't know what would happen. Didn't your friend get hurt though?
Oh yeah, that I block it out. My friend did get hurt. Actually, the not so fun part about this story is someone, it wasn't my friend, it was just someone that I knew from there. He was friends of people okay. that I know. That was my first encounter with him. And he was wearing, he's Palestinian, so he's wearing a Palestinian kufiya. Mm-hmm. And that really provoked the officers at the time. And they told him, and he caught it on video, that they told him that this dress was illegal. And when they realized he was filming, that's when they got really angry and they started, they twisted his arm and he hurt his shoulder. Mm. And later on, during that encounter, while they were still detaining us, he was taken into a police van, and out of the police van, he was shouting, "I just want you, everyone to know they're just now discussing what charges they want to fabricate against me." I actually think that the police can be as bad as other places. Mm-hmm. There's in Taz, there was this article from 3 years ago in Hermannstrasse. It's something to do with Hermann. It always goes wrong, I think. there was a guy that was there in the U-Bahn, and then he saw the security of the U-Bahn trying to kick a homeless person out. And he mm-hmm. was like, "Hey, take it easy." So the security called the police on him. And then the police, when they arrived, he thought they were going to help him against the security of the BVG. But instead, the police actually beat him. And then one of the police officers put his knee on his neck, a la George Floyd. And the guy was saying, "I can't breathe. He has problems breathing. And I can't breathe. I'm gonna die." And the police officer responded, "Hopefully." And the entire situation was completely absurd, because he later asked for the footage from the BVG, but he got the footage with 15 minutes with the police officer's knee on his neck missing from that footage. He filed charges against the police, but they were dismissed. The police counter-filed charges against him, and he's on trial for beating and insulting the police. Now, there's one thing that I was shocked to know when I came to Germany, is that you cannot hold German police accountable. Their testimony in court is worth more than a civilian, and usually they agree to whatever testimony. So practically, you can never hold a policeman accountable in Germany. So what they decide to do to you mm-hmm. is their prerogative. If yeah. they're nice, it's up to them. But there's no systematic
yeah.
Obstacle to them doing whatever they want.
Great.
So how did your story end? What happened to you?
Well, at the end, after an hour, and then saying that, "Oh, you're free to go, nothing will happen," people were surprised later to find that they got letters that implicate them in this kind of charges of conducting unlawful protests. And I got a letter to that regard as well. And
so you were charged with attending an illegal assembly, right?
Participating in an illegal right. assembly. Yeah.
Okay.
I got that.
Even though they told you that all they were doing was checking your ID.
Exactly. Right. And it's really funny, because I then went to this, this group that helps, racial profiling cases. And they helped me with a lawyer. And then the lawyer asked for my file. And in the file, the police say that they informed everyone there that they were going to be charged, which is a complete lie. No one else was informed. So just they made it up throughout. So it's ongoing. A lot of people got fines. I'm still kind of responding to that. They got 330 euro fines, other people that I was with.
Yeah, and I think another really interesting point that you make in the article is the idea that we have accepted in Berlin this like very free, supposedly and democratic society with this lovely constitution that we made in 48 to is the idea that we think it's very very normal. And there, Berlin is a city, if you compare it to other big cities, like there's a protest culture here. There's a lot of people on the streets. You say like Hermannplatz is often the site of like weekly stuff. There's always something going on. I live there near there as well. But we've accepted it as completely normal that we have to put in like an application for the state authorities, whom we are often protesting, to approve our protests. And the protest that you were not allegedly attended was like banned.
I can offer my perspective, which could be completely wrong. But I think that in Germany, not a lot of laws were actually enacted, you know, that make it possible for anyone to protest all the time. Most of the laws have not really changed, but the way they've been implemented is kind of a little different. And there's a lot of different culture around the freedom of it, but the laws at the end of the day, they can be very repressive and they can be used to repress. For example, if you're protesting against the head of state, they can stop you for citing security reasons, which is exactly the kind of reasons that they would use in Egypt to stop every protest, except that they don't use it in a place like Berlin very often.
Like, how much can we say that we have the freedom to protest if sometimes we don't? I don't know. Veronica, you're German.
So I have answers to this.
Yes!
I don't.
I'm not sure there is.
No, it's a weird conundrum that I do not understand and or I'm okay with, obviously. So I wouldn't.
Yeah. I think it's both like this odd kind of state control thing and also maybe a strange German fear of spontaneity.
I was going to say, I mean, the thing is that this also relates to a very particular German issue here, right? Because your demonstration was for Palestinians, right? And so this is something that doesn't really play well with German statehood, German authority. That's obviously an issue in itself, right? And it does not at all justify, thank you, like the introduction of censorship in whatever way, but like...
Yeah, it's a particularly... I don't even know the adjective issue.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't want to say... it's like something that they almost don't know what to do with, I think, the German authorities.
Well, I think they know what to do, but they're not really in a place to question whether, you know, whatever they're told to be doing about it is actually adequate or not. But yeah, I think that's a different podcast.
Just in fairness, this is like there were 7 protests that were banned and only in Berlin, but not in the entirety of Germany. And right. It was very particular. I think it relates to the person in Berlin from Die Linke, you know, intervening. But generally speaking, there are a lot of protests, pro-Palestinian protests that happen very normally and like they're very often. So I would not single... I wouldn't say that this relates to Germany. They do, you know, to their credit, they do allow protests that they don't believe in. But in Berlin, especially that city that is like supposed to be, that's what makes it so special, because Berlin was the only city that didn't allow these protests.
Well, yeah, we have the Querdenker protests, which some of them were banned because but only because of the infection laws.
Also, but then again, I mean, maybe they're just explicit. Here's another argument for like a racist baseline, right? Because if they're expecting maybe these to be particularly, like not violent, but particularly strong in Berlin as the place it is, then you'd understand why they want to maybe kind of forbid them here particularly.
Yeah,
I don't
like
know.
A pro-Palestinian rally is different, and like that has a different context in Hermannplatz than maybe some other Platz in some other smaller I don't know.
But that's the thing also.
I wasn't at the protest. We should make that clear. You weren't even there.
There wasn't one. It was banned.
There wasn't one, and you weren't at it.
No, I wasn't at a protest.
He was going to the park.
Yes, I'm not. I'm making it sound like we're
trying to rip this up. Sorry. I just felt like I hadn't said anything for a while, so I thought I'd say something.
What would have happened if it was a blonde girl that walked around with a kufiya that day?
Like, would she have been detained for an hour?
I mean, I don't have a coiffure, but as a blonde girl who walks around Hermannplatz weaving my way, I once had a great day where I was carrying my Christmas tree and kind of got accidentally caught up in like a pro-Palestinian. Right, I was like, living in Neukölln is great. But, nah.
Nah, right?
No, and I, it's awful. Like, I can't imagine ever being detained for, like, over an hour. And I think you're remarkably, like, sanguine. I don't know, that just sounds
But this
very,
is
like...
what I thought when we started this off. I was like, well, I'm not sure. I don't have police stories to share. I've never had any issues with, well, crossing red lights on the bike. But that doesn't really count, right? Because, anyway.
No one's going to ever take my documents for, like, an... like, they're just not.
But I don't think it was even as deliberate as like this targeting from police on the ground. They've had orders to do this for people who looked Arab, probably because there were other people around us, white people who were sent away saying, hey, listen, don't come here, it's too dangerous for you. And I was like, can't you send me away? No. You're just gonna have to stay with us.
And I think that's something that you talk about in the article as well, just the idea that these police officers were like being very nice, a lot of them very friendly, having chats over the ice cream, but they were like, no, but this is what we've been told to do, these are the, this is the direction, the directive that we've been given. And then there's this huge, a bit like with what happened to that guy who intervened in Hermannstrasse, like when someone tries to interrupt this process, then there's this lack of understanding. Yeah, but this is what the, I don't know what it's going to take for us to question that. But speaking of protests and what's allowed and what's not, I remember there being quite a lot of like outrage in whatever of the lockdowns it was when the commemoration of Hanau was not allowed to happen. Which might segue into what Veronica wanted to talk about. And that was also my Verdecker point. Like, yeah, eventually they got banned, but like what the fuck did they have to do? He was just trying to go to the park. They almost got into the fucking Bundestag. And then they're like, oh, you know what, lads? You've had your fun. We're not going to let you do this anymore. Sorry. Yes, I'm done.
Veronica, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Well, there's an exhibition going on in the HKW, the Haus der Kulturen der Welt, which has been organized and sort of created by the organization that you work for, Forensis. And it is about Hanau. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but most of our listeners don't live live in Berlin, so they couldn't go because it was in Frankfurt. But now it's in Berlin, so now you can go if you are a listener. And why is it important? Veronica.
Why is it important? I think it's important because it is exactly about that question of police accountability, or like accountability towards the police in Germany, or police failures, right? So, and the exhibition does not, like, it focuses a lot on Hanau, but it also has, it's called Three Doors. It's about three doors in connection with police incidents that have sort of a racist connotation. Two of these doors relating to Hanau and the third one relating to the death of Uri Jallo. Ben, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think 17 years ago in Dessau, 2005 it was,
yeah.
No? Yeah. A young person who came to Germany from Sierra Leone and burnt to death in his police cell, allegedly in a suicide while being tied to his mattress with a broken skull and I think no lighter or something like this, even though they're so there's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a big issue for a long time.
Nobody's ever really been kind of, yeah, there's not been any.
Big with certain circles, not big enough for the system to have actually done anything about it in terms of actual legal consequences, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I heard, was it you? I don't remember. Like, someone told me that in that particular police station, this was not the only incident of that kind. So there is, and this is, I mean, Sachsen, I think, Eastern Germany, so there is a particular air of racism going on, I guess, that, it may not only relate to police issues anyway, but... Mm-hmm.
So what is new about this exhibition? What does this exhibition show?
So it looks into, like, in relation to Hanau, what it tries to do is to kind of look into open questions around the ongoing investigations in Hanau and the closed investigation on the Uri Jallo case. And because it's been built by an organization that kind of works with architectural methods. It tries to kind of reconstruct these rooms in order to find new evidence. And so the first big element of it is that they went into and looked into the question of whether people could have survived the attack had the emergency exit in one of the places where the perpetrator killed a couple of people had not been locked, because this is one of the assumptions on which the public inquiry had been closed, that it could not have been proven whether these people would have survived or not. And so forensic architecture and forensics looked into whether this is actually an accurate statement or whether maybe the investigation merits to be reopened or not. And
yeah, so we should probably make clear what you mean by the attack. So a man went into a cafe in Hanau, which is outside Frankfurt, and opened fire on several people of what German people call immigrant background. And he killed how many people?
Nine people. Killed 19 people in two different places. And then he went back home and shot his mother and himself.
Yeah, his bedridden mother. Yeah, he shot his... And the mother, amongst other things, what the Hanau exhibition shows is a kind of an acoustic experiment, because the police said they because the police had to give a reason for why they didn't raid the house,
and they said they raided it so late. Yeah,
and they couldn't hear certain shots that were fired, and this exhibition proves with this acoustic experiment that this shot was very audible in the area.
Yes, right. That's yeah. Also part of the, yeah. So that was part of the preparation when they kind of reconstructed the scene of this element of that crime. So the shots that were fired in the house. And this is also what relates to the second door. So the door of the house of the perpetrator, which was supposed to be watched by the police, but maybe wasn't as much as the police was alleging or claiming in the beginning of the investigation, because exactly they would have had to be able to hear the shots coming out of the house. So the combination of these claims that the police makes and then the investigation of forensic architecture kind of essentially raises the question whether either the police lied in their statements or they regarding what they've heard or where they were placed or whatever. But the whole, I mean, the interesting thing about this investigation or this exhibition in general is because that it kind of pinpoints different elements of police failure that happened that night and that were already brought to light by the Initiative 19 February, which is an initiative founded by survivors and family members of the victims who are now for more than 2 years fighting a fight to claim that get accountability in that around that crime, and who also were the ones actually initiating this collaboration with forensic architecture. I'm really sorry, now I lost my train of thought.
That's what the rum and coke can do.
It is. How is everyone's mega? Mine's delicious.
Are you enjoying yours, Wael?
Have you drunk yours?
I think I drank mine really fast and has a really positive effect. But I like this. Okay. But considering the topic, I see why mega cans are in order.
Thank you. I don't know why anyone would do a podcast sober unless they really had to, which I suppose. Yeah.
But I was just wondering, do you want to talk a little more about the these actual elements of fuck-ups? Because I think they're interesting to kind of also go into the question of how racist is the police? Is this just structural failings, or is it actual state neglect?
Is it systemic racism, which would lead to lying and covering stuff up? Is it incompetence and then coming a mix?
Yeah,
well, let's talk about the helicopters.
Let's talk about the helicopters.
Because that's what you actually did. What did you actually do,
I did,
Veronica?
I worked on the transcript of the helicopter footage.
So this is helicopters that are flying over the town of Hanau during the attack. And Forensis got access to the audio and video data, like their files of what they were recorded during these helicopter, these police helicopter flights. And you transcribed them.
Not all of it, but like bits and pieces. But yes.
And what did you find out?
Well, what we found out is that the helicopter essentially was kind of circling above Hanau, clueless for quite a while, and essentially being cut off from the police station, right? And didn't really know what they were
doing. So just to give, so that people knew that there was an attack happening. The police knew, so they had the helicopter up there because there were two sites of attack. So this is between the first and the second, was it? Or
that's after.
After
because
the whole
attack actually just took a few minutes.
Okay.
And then the guy went home, and between the time that he killed the last people and he was actually... the police stormed his house, there's several hours. And in between, you have the helicopter flying about, like over Hanau, not like...
Okay, I see the
not
problem.
Being connected.
Oh, this horrendous thing has happened. And there's this guy who's like fled the scene and...
That's one of the... I mean, the other really weird thing is the fact that there was someone who tried... Like one of the victims followed the perpetrator from one place to the other. And in on his way... tried to call the police three times. Like, he called five times, misdialed twice, came through three times, nobody picked up the phone. And so for me, I mean, honestly, this is one of the things where I'm like, well, this is not only about racism, because it could have been anyone calling this police
the call
station, right? They don't know whether it's
a
person with an immigrational background who's calling because of... a racist
okay.
attack.
These are the details on which I am sort of lamentably ignorant. Oh dear.
Maybe the question is, if the person committing these crimes, right, was a person of color, they would have definitely stormed in and not waited 4 hours to storm in.
4 hours? They gave that, what? Four, what? I didn't have 4 hours to go home and change today. And they knew where this fucking lad was.
They
were watching his house.
For 4 hours!
And they weren't actually even properly watching the doors of the house. Particularly not the back door. Front door was also a bit questionable. But he could have actually just left the house and gone on.
But yeah, you can't take your fucking bicycle across a square on her.
No.
Fuck, like, what?
I mean, they could have waited 4 hours. They could have waited 4 hours before they detained me, but they didn't.
Just followed you for 4 hours, been like, what's he doing? Oh, he's getting ice cream. Oh, there's no tiramisu. Oh, dear. He's having a bad day. Maybe we leave him alone. Okay, right. What are the police saying about this? What?
No.
I'm going to come down to this exhibition and just ruin it for everyone by going around being like, what is this? Yeah, okay.
No, I think you're going to be in great company. The police isn't really... nothing substantial, let's put it that way. There is like one of the things that came out a few weeks after the attack was that I think 13 out of 19, but don't nail me down on that number. It doesn't matter. So a substantial part of the people that stormed the house were later found to be members of racist right-wing chat groups. So the whole unit was suspended.
Wait, when you say members of a racist right-wing chat group, there was a police WhatsApp chat group, and they were sharing racist material on there, like they were doing anti-Semitic stuff, and weren't they? Well, that was.
Well, I've never looked into these, but this is what I would understand as racist.
So it emerged that a lot of those officers, because they were suspended when this came out, so they found that there were like the racist messages on their phones. And they suspended them, and then it emerged later that they were also on duty during the Hanau attack. And so they kind of like, oh, it's the same people who failed to storm the house in time also happen to be sharing racist content.
The question I often ask, why are these like really racist perpetrators often never caught by the police? Why are they never in the same place together?
Yeah, that sucks. That's another question that we're really all looking fucking sucks. For answers to.
I mean, he was known.
He was known to the police, even just like many others, right? So he was known to the police as a conspiracist and weirdo, but also race. Like, I don't know how much they knew about racist backgrounds or even cared, because I think that these institutions in Hessen also have a history of kind of not following up on these cases.
But then if you have like 13 out of the 19 police officers, and that's not to say that everyone who shares like racist content on WhatsApp is gonna go, you know, like and do stuff like this, but if you are responsible for monitoring extremism and you're on that side of the spectrum, it's like certain people are not gonna show up as worrying, or like your perception is skewed of what is threatening and what is not.
Yeah, plus I'm not sure how, I mean, that's the big question to ask, right? Like, how sensitized are many of these people to this mission of, sorry, preventing or kind of like going after extremist people? Not at all, right? Or, I mean, because for example, like if you look at this...
Extremists... What do they look like, I think, is the question.
No, but like if you look at, for example, there was this NSU report 2 weeks back, 10 days ago, that got leaked, right? And where you have very clear evidence of, like, you know, what is it called? Secret Services. So the Verfassungsschutz and Landesverfassungsschutz in Hessen not following up on instances of right-wing extremists owning weapons illegally. And I mean, if you have people that hate other people and walk around with weapons illegally, I mean, either you, as the police who does not investigate, you at least, you know, you're not, apparently not trained, or you don't think that this is important. And I think that's a very important question to ask. Why do you not think that this is important?
Mm, yeah.
Do you want to?
I have an answer.
What
to
do you think that they would answer?
The answer is it's not important because society does not think it's important, and therefore the system does not think it's important. It's okay. So it's very the question of racism for me is very interesting, because there are two types of racism. There's one that where you feel something racist, that someone is lesser than you are, and it's a feeling, and then you could go on their WhatsApp and they share racist jokes. But there is action that is racist, and sometimes people who do not feel racist things commit racist actions, and that is where the system comes in. Because if the system is racist, it makes everyone racist, whether they feel it or not. And I think that's the problem with Germany, that the system is racist. Because even aside from the color of the skin, the police are superior to a normal citizen because their word means more. And that is a kind of elitism. But also the skin color falls into kind of elitism. And so therefore racism is kind of very, very systematic in the way the system is structured, which is like the courts, the police, society itself. So the problem is the police were probably thinking, okay, this guy, the victims are, we know that they're from immigrant backgrounds. We don't care. Let them get over and done with, and then we'll check it out. And it reminds me of something that happened in Egypt, actually. We were watching some people getting into a fight, and then we went to the police station and we're saying, hey, listen, these guys at the corner are getting to fight. And these were like, they were people who were like homeless. And then the police told us, listen, when they're done, you know, we'll pick up everything. You don't have to worry. Even if someone is killed, it's no problem. So they have no value for them to intervene and stop. And I think on a different level, we can see this kind of racism and like the value of human life being different between one person and another, reflected in the systems there.
Yeah, it seems like I don't have any other explanation. If you know you have identified a perpetrator that has just murdered 9 people in a public place in cold blood, and they were watching his house and they wait for 4 hours, like, I really struggle to, with all the best will in the open-minded world, if that had been another place, if that had been a, you know, cupcake cafe in Prenzlauer Berg, or, you know, like, I other than a cafe frequented by people with migration backgrounds, which is, yeah, I don't know. What's there? And they're not able to give, this is the other thing, they're not able to provide a counter narrative that is plausible. So, and also literally loads of their lads have been, like, there's documented evidence of racism. Like, surely you can't be a police officer anymore in 2022 and, like, have the internet and you still think it's okay, even if you think it's fucking funny, that fucking meme, but, like, if you still feel such fucking impunity that you will do that on WhatsApp, which you know could be read out in court, and does, like, that really points exactly, like, while... it's what you're saying. There is just this impunity and they know that, and they can get angry when you said that they snapped kind of at your acquaintance on Hermannplatz when they realized people were filming them. And it's not like, oh, they're afraid of being filmed because then we live in a litigious society and they're all going to be sued. It's like that you're sort of questioning that, but they know that they can still, even when they are being filmed, be physical with someone extremely. You still feel like, in with all of the scrutiny that the police is under, I mean, scrutiny kind of in certain spheres of the public and like ACAB being scrawled on everything, you still feel like you can have WhatsApp groups like that. Like that speaks kind of for itself. I don't understand what the explanation for this is if it's not.
Yeah, plus that's the question, like how much like actual state scrutiny is there?
And it's
like,
oh, I yeah.
And this is one thing, like, because I've been here before, right? Like, just an afterthought on the first time I was on this podcast when we talked about whistleblowing, right? Remember, there was this whole European directive going on, and now they're transposing the, or they're essentially mostly done transposing that into the German legal system. And it does not, obviously, I mean, also, yeah, then, well, it does not include reporting on the police. And the question for me here is, I mean, I haven't read the law yet, and I just talked to someone who works with the parliament, but the question is, still is, whether that's actually legal in the context of EU law. But because technically all public institutions are supposed to kind of, you know, provide these mechanisms now, mm-hmm. But also, I mean, the European Union itself took out anything that relates to national security. So there is an argument to be made by the state to say, no, anything that relates, this police stuff is national security, so we don't have to introduce whistleblower protection. So you're missing essentially that opportunity to introduce this layer of accountability.
Oh my God. And this is like, ultimately, the police are on the ground in the community to protect fucking citizens, not actually, as they do around Hermannplatz, to stop fucking protests or evict people from squats, like, or bars that, like, collectively run bars.
No, it's incredible. I actually want to add something to the NSU leaks that came out, is that... these were about special, you know, secret police that were part of right-wing groups that have actually killed people. And Hessen, I think, wanted to lock up these files for 120 years. And then someone said, no, 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 that's too much. Let's do it 60 years. And in the end, we know about them because they were leaked by a comedian, a German comedian. So what we're seeing from, like, the system, you know, is that they don't want people to even know that such a thing exists.
And this is why the whole it's a few bad apples argument is such fucking bullshit. Because you're like, well, then if you actually were a non-racist stand-up, like, we really want to do the best that we can organization, you want to know where you're fucking up so you can take step. Just...
My anyway,
the can is empty.
Oh, we finished the mega can.
Rage.
Should we get the emergency mega cans out?
Oh, crap. Break the glass.
Break the glass. Yeah. Do we want to go into the NSU leaks? How are you feeling, Veronica? How much of your rum is left.
I'm not sure. Actually, there's a lot to say. I mean, I have to say these were not very... There was not a lot of stuff in them that was very interesting. It was just...
Right. So hang on. So, wait a minute. Can I just explain what happened? So NSU, National Socialist Underground, a Nazi terrorist group, killed 10 people, were discovered in 2011, and the files were supposed to be hidden by the Verfassungsschutz in Hessen. Verfassungsschutz is the domestic intelligence agency.
Thank you. I was looking for that term.
Yeah. So they were leaked by Jan Böhmermann on the telly, and by Frag den Staat, the internet platform. And these files, which were going to be locked for originally 120 years, and then 30 years, and now they've just been leaked. And now they've been leaked that everyone is going like, well, we knew all that already. What are they?
Yeah.
like most of the stuff in it was, pretty not very controversial. There wasn't like everyone kind of thought no. that was.
It's controversial.
There's.
But yeah. it was stuff that had been assumed.
Well, yeah, I mean, mostly, I think, just to make this clear, this is just an internal review of the role and relation of the Internal Security Service to the activities of the NSU. So, and this is a report that was commissioned right after the whole NSU scandal broke, after they found this burnt caravan.
Caravan.
And so, essentially, someone commissioned the Hessen office to kind of look into, okay, what did we know? And this report is based on that investigation between November 2011 and sometime in, I think, June 2012. And surprisingly, yes, they didn't find a lot of evidence of on what the Verfassungsschutz knew at the time. What this report, I think, and this is mainly the reason why maybe I think this is was supposed to be like locked for such a long time, is because it states very clearly that mistakes were made. We didn't follow up properly on a lot of cues in particular when it comes to possession of illegal possession of guns and explosives of right-wing extremists. And that there is a training needs and that kind of stuff. So it's not like, it's a bit of an embarrassing testimony to the work of that institution, right? But it also states that there's a lot of files missing that should have been accessible in that context, which, well, I have the numbers. So it's like, initially it said there were 540 pieces of documents missing, and then a couple of years later another report stated they found around 300 of them, but 200 more or less are missing today still, and are probably never going to be found, because I think there was some serious shredding going on between November 11 and 14 on that weekend after the public prosecutor started investigating. So yeah, and I mean, that's another question, right? Like, evidence being kind of destroyed. But this, anyway, is not new either. We knew about this before. This report just essentially says that, well, we would know more if it hadn't been for missing documents. Great.
And the Hessen Verfassungsschutz has now filed charges against whoever leaked
against
those.
Against Unbekannt, yeah.
Against, whoever leaked that.
Yeah. So much for protecting whistleblowers.
No, fuck this. Absolutely fuck this. Like, so all this report says is we made mistakes and we need more training. And yet they get to bury this fucking shit for 60 years.
Also, it doesn't really specify what kind of training, because, like, I mean, it may ideally should probably say something like, we should better understand that all people are equal. But
training us all,
but I'm not sure.
Pieces of shit.
Exactly.
Right. But this is just like insane, and I don't like. And I think this is like you were saying. We need to have a cultural shift, because until we understand that certain organizations are not above the law, then we can't we can't. I fucking am a teacher. That is usually like I work for private school, but like it's a government thing. Like we don't just get to like massively fuck up and then be like, oh, can we just like not tell the parents that for like 60 years? Can we just keep that out of the Tagesspiegel? No, it's fucking everywhere. They love talking about us constantly. Like what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong.
Well, that's because this society doesn't belong to who we think are important to the weak. It belongs to the powerful, those who make laws, those who enforce them. At the end of the day, the police, it's not the police that's racist. It reflects political will, which is racist, which then, you know, you take something like big corporations, they fail, and then governments give them like all of these laws that make them do better. But if you as a teacher make one mistake, whoa, you're going to be like on public trial.
Yeah.
So I think they go after people to show that there might be some kind of law, but a lot of people are above the law, particularly the police.
Well, good job. They're the ones enforcing it. There's no overlap or conflict of interest there. Brilliant. That's fine. Are we done? Please, because my booze is gone. I cannot.
Yeah, I was looking for an opportunity to wrap it up, and I thought that's a lovely place to finish there. Thank you very much, Veronica and Wael. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for the mega can.
Thank you very much. Well, your mega can's all right, at least.
Oh yeah. And what is your favorite flavor of ice cream, by the way?
I think it's salted caramel now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I would have liked tiramisu, but salted caramel.
Okay, that's good.
Beats it.
And yeah, thanks very much, Veronica.
Thank you for having me. I want to say rum and chocolate.
Yeah, you like your rum, don't you? You've had a rum and
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rum and raisin.
Yeah. Good one, yeah. Interesting. Your favorite flavor? Walnut.
Oh, that's not a bad one either, actually.
I like hazelnut. Or the blackberry one at Fräulein Frost, but you get loads of blackberry seeds in your teeth, but I'm all right with that. These are the small injustices I feel like we should all face for building of character. The rest of this fucking bullshit, no. Good night, everybody.
Bye. Bye.